This talk was given by Danica Shoan Ankeli at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shoan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This talk has two titles: Coming into the Country and Don't Go Anywhere. I wanted to talk about samsara and nirvana and vow. And I wanted to talk about the distance that we travel, to use a turn of phrase, which of course in the Buddhist teachings is no distance at all. The path is a path from samsara, which refers to the drifting, cyclical, wandering, kind of bewildered state of our ordinary human life, marked by suffering, pain and suffering, confusion, ignorance, anger and hatred, perhaps punctuated by moments of bliss and pleasure and delight, which fade very quickly and become part of the sea of pain. And nirvana. Nirvana, which means to extinguish or to blow out, to extinguish craving, attachment, the notion of a separate self, grasping. So naturally, I feel much more familiar with the terrain of samsara than I do with the terrain of nirvana. But the good news, and I think all of us have encountered this good news, is that all the way along the path, the scenery is changing. We're not going anywhere, but our experience is being transformed, our experience of our life. And so as I was thinking about this, I thought of, when you're headed to an incredible destination, sometimes if you take your time heading there, you begin to notice the changing landscape, and you can take delight in those transforming features even before you've reached your so-called final goal. As I was reflecting on that, I remembered about 10 years ago or so, just before moving into the monastery, Gokhan and I took our kind of last hurrah trip to Alaska. And a friend encouraged us to take the ferry from Bellingham Bay to Juneau, which is a trip by sea that takes several days. And it was such good advice. It was such good advice because, to borrow John McPhee's title from his book on Alaska, The journey of coming into that incredible wilderness was something to behold itself. So on this ferry ride, because it takes several days, there are spots available to camp out. Those are the cheap seats. There are cabins, but you can camp on the deck of the ferry, and I don't know why anyone would choose anything else. And so you're leaving from Bellingham Bay, which is, you know, quite close to the Canadian border, and already you're in a different world. And then slowly, because you're on a ferry boat and they don't go very fast, you begin to enter a whole nother world. The mountains are getting higher and higher and higher. The water is changing. Orcas appear, bald eagles, like everywhere. And, you know, I remember very clearly one morning waking up early, and there was mist, and seeing the mountains ahead of us were so much bigger than the ones that were there last night. This whole subject of samsara and practice has been really live for me. I mean, it should be really live for all of us all the time. Let's make no mistake. If it's not live for us, then we've fallen asleep at the wheel. But particularly, you know, last week I was down at our city center in Brooklyn. And so this is the last several times that I've been down there, I have been really struck by how much more viscerally I feel connected to the news of the day, and how upsetting and disturbing that is. And I think maybe, you know, if I were living in the world all the time, as so many of you are, I would build up a bit of a thicker skin and become inured to it somewhat, just out of necessity, because we've got to, like, get through the day. But something about moving from the cloister of the monastery into more exposure to news and to conversations about what's happening, and to just the poignancy of being among my fellow human beings in such close, intimate, real ways, touching so much suffering, just, you know, in a glancing kind of contact. I have felt very tender, and you know, have felt myself kind of brush up against, you know, the wisps of despair and hopelessness that can arise. And so I was gently weeping over my breakfast burrito in the Kingston Diner on Monday morning. Gokhan picked me up at the bus, and we were having breakfast before starting session, and just kind of feeling like, I know there's a way to practice this, but right now it's escaping me. And then later that day, I was doing the gatha on shaving the head. And I felt so clearly the medicine, you know, the medicine of our vows. So if we think of practice as the ferry boat, the vehicle that's kind of carrying us along our journey, then what is the vow? What is the vow? And in a general sense, although I appreciate that we all may have a different sense of vow and what brings us here and what keeps us coming back to our cushion, for me, I would put it most simply as the vow to wake up. To wake up and to bring y'all with me. So the vow to me feels like, I thought maybe it's the water, you know, and that ferry boat is moving through the water. Our practice is moving through and supported by and surrounded in the water of our vow. And then I thought, actually, maybe it's space, like the whole thing, holding the whole thing, nothing left out. There are very explicit teachings in Buddhism that speak about how nirvana and samsara are the same thing. So I had always heard a quote attributed to Nagarjuna that was basically that. Nirvana is samsara. Samsara is nirvana. And with a little help from Google, I found out that's a misquote, but that Nagarjuna did say basically something along the lines of, there's no difference that can be found between them. that the boundary of samsara is exactly the boundary of nirvana. And he describes nirvana as the end of our conceptual elaborations, the end of the dualistic thinking that we project onto everything. So nirvana is the peace that's naturally present when we cease and desist, when we extinguish. And so while we may, I certainly, definitely in my early years of practice, imagined nirvana as the state that I wanted, enlightenment, I'm gunning for it, and like, zap me. And, you know, that can lead to good, diligent practice. It can mean that we're like at our cushion and we're sitting through Kinhin and we're kind of doing our utmost. And sooner or later, you know, and perhaps the development of samadhi and so on and so forth, but sooner or later we're going to discover that it doesn't quite work like that. And thank goodness, because actually getting into all the nooks and crannies, like if it were just one quick whoosh, you're enlightened, then we would miss out on all this really juicy stuff, like life and like relationships and like growth and transformation. So the path is a transformation of our mind. It's a transformation of our karma. And that transformation is subtle in some ways and profound. And practice itself, you know, a few weeks back, Shugen Roshi was not feeling well and we had to cancel his retreat. Maybe some of you were going to come to that on Hakuin. And I mention this because there were a few days in there where it was unclear whether he was going to be here on Sunday to give the Sunday talk or not. And for a number of reasons, mainly that, you know, none of the other teachers were going to be here, it was maybe going to fall to me to give the Sunday talk. And I was like, oh boy, I better start thinking about this. But I'm a last minute kind of gal, so I thought, I'm just going to do a little research, and I'm going to gamble and bet that he'll be feeling better, and I'll have something up my sleeve that I can like whoosh, pull together if need be. And indeed, he was feeling better, but I did do a little research, and now you all can benefit from it. And so I started to ask a few folks, you know, what when we say practice that, you know, when a difficult situation arises or we encounter the suffering of samsara and someone says, yeah, okay, well, so, you know, why don't you practice that? Like, what does that mean? What does that mean to practice something? And so I asked a handful of my brothers and sisters in residence, and I got, you'll be glad to know, very coherent, cohesive responses that all sort of pointed in the same line. So we're doing something right. We seem to have a shared understanding of what practice is. And it kind of came down to the study of what's actually going on. So to practice something is to take your mind and look and see and try to discern what's happening. So what does that mean? It means that when the suffering arises and I feel it, first I have to know that I'm suffering, right? We can blindly act out, and Sayin touched on this in her talk yesterday, you know, where we're just kind of reacting. But something happens when we know, like, oh, I'm in pain. I'm hurting. And then we can look more closely. And we can look with the mind and try to understand and see with our discerning wisdom. And we can look with the body and with the heart and feel our way also into our direct experience and feel what is going on? And because the nature of mind is lucid, clear, right, when we apply our attention correctly, and when we've learned how to do that, and when we've gotten a little help from our friends to keep us on track, we can begin to illuminate what's actually going on. So this whole thing, the whole ferry boat, like, you're driving it, which is kind of incredible. It's your penetrating eye. The teacher can point, can indicate, can hold space, but you're the only one who's going to be able to see what's going on. The other thing, so I asked people, okay, so if that's what practice is, then why is that liberative? Why does that free us? So you can see what's going on, great. And I heard a few things, again, all along the same line, and it kind of came down to a couple takes. One was that when we can see what we're doing and we're not just reacting from habit energy, we can make a different choice. And Sayan talked about this also in her talk. You know, when we react and respond differently, everything around us is going to shift in accord too. That's liberative. That's transformative. Another way of kind of saying the same thing is that when we go into an experience and see what's happening, it becomes a doorway. It opens up. We may feel like we're, you know, we impose this grid of like what reality is on top of our life, but it's totally a false projection. And so if we look more closely, we can see like, oh, it's not that at all. If we look closely enough and with sustained attention correctly, we will see it's empty. It's empty. And the other phrase that came up was to practice is not turning away, which is really the same thing using slightly different words, right? Something arises, we can study it, we cannot turn away, which means, you know, if you think of the practice of Zazen, something arises, and rather than exiting, we stay with it. We stay with it, and the power of Buddha mind is that when we stay with something, it transforms, it opens up, it becomes illuminated by our wisdom. So that is why it is so important to not go anywhere. When we begin to see what's happening in the mind, it's usually pretty awful. It's the worst part of the trip, but it's extremely necessary. So, you know, we see how, like, selfish we are, or how, like, totally insecure we are, or how, like, filled with rage we are, or just how bitchy. But when we see, again, there's a transformative process that's allowed to begin. I saw this, you know, the phenomena of how we're projecting our mind onto reality. I mean, you know, dharmically speaking, like, basically my understanding is that it's all a projection. But at you know, levels along the way, we can see, like, oh, like, I'm in a bad mood, and so, like, everything, you know, everyone's bothering me, everyone's irritating, or I feel, you know, depressed, and so, like, life is pointless, and, like, what are we doing this, you know, thing for anyway? And I saw this so clearly. You know, that's that's like the self-driving power, you know, the fact that we're the ones who have to see, and there's like no substitute, and how powerful it is when we do see it. It's like on the Women's Wilderness trip a couple weeks ago, I was the first one up at my campsite, and I woke up. It was before sunrise, and there was the lake, and it was covered in this incredible misty fog. Like, you really couldn't see anything. It was so beautiful. And I was like, gonna get up and like make myself a cup of coffee on this amazing rock that came out into the lake. And I was like carrying my little bundle of supplies out onto the rock, and I saw this irritation arise in me, kind of like literally could feel it like crawling up the back of my neck. And it was precipitated by a series of apparently inconsequential thoughts, like so mundane, so ordinary, I won't even bore you with the details. But like there I was, suddenly from nirvana right into hell. And that's what's so, you know, when we say it's subtle but profound, it is subtle, but that doesn't mean it's not going to explode your world or bring it crashing down or completely illuminate it. Just because it's subtle doesn't mean it isn't fucking powerful. So vow. Vow as a catalyst, vow as something that can help cut through our obscurations. There's the spontaneous, powerful vow that arises in the moment. You see something, you think, I'm going to do something about that. I vow to make a difference. There's the vow that's held by a lifetime of practice and work. And, you know, once you start to kind of orient in terms of vow and its place in our practice, you start to see like, oh my God, it's holding everything. Like all of the liturgy, every day, all day, throughout the day, it's just like vow, 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 vow. And so you can, I do, kind of like, you know, lose track of that. But to return to it, you know, what happens? And, you know, for me, I feel like the appreciation and deepening experience of like what a vow is and how it works and what are my vows keeps unfolding. There's the vows, of course, that we say, that we articulate. Then there are the vows that we live and embody. And then there is the way that vow gets inside and transforms a person so that they are just a living manifestation of vow. And I think of our teachers and how true that is of my experience of them. It's the energy of our life when we harness it and then channel it in a particular direction. So the crazy thing about samsara is that we can't outrun it. We can't avoid it. If we try to go away, it never works. When folks come into residency here at the monastery, you know, they have to see the guardian council. And I remember my guardian council for doing my very first year of residency. I had just come off of, I had been to the monastery and done a month, and I had taken a year in which I was basically like let me give this running away thing one last shot. And I had gotten myself into a relationship that was really not good. And so instead of taking care of that in a good way, I bolted. I took a job across the country and left. Okay. And then I was at that job, and it was in Arizona. It was working for the Forest Service, and it was like not what I expected at all. It was super hot, and I was in a trailer with really shitty air conditioning that like didn't work, with this other young woman who I felt no resonance with, and these two kind of scrappy, strange fellows. And I was like, what am I doing here? We would like hike into the mountains and like cut trees by hand because it was a wilderness area and so you couldn't use power tools. And it was so hot. And I was like, the desert is beautiful, but it's really not my place. And so my friend came to visit, and we were out at dinner. And she was like, you should just, like, let's just go. And I was like, great idea. And I literally left in the middle of the night. I, like, left a note for my supervisor. It was not well handled and, like, took off again, running. And we spent the whole summer just driving around across the country. And the summer ended. And I was back in New York City. And I was like, okay. I tried it. I tried it. I tried the running. It's not going to work. Let me pick up the phone and make an appointment for guardian counsel. And in that guardian counsel, I remember Miyotai Sensei was on it. And I had enough of a relationship with the monastery and with her that she kind of had some idea of my comings and goings over the past year. And so she asked me very directly about the running. Like, we ask residents when they come in, we ask explicitly about commitment. We kind of call that into the room because we know from being there ourselves and from seeing many people be there, like, your commitment is going to be tested. You're going to want to leave at some point. So, like, how are you going to work with that? And because of the way residency works, we become dependent on the folks who are here. So when someone departs, it's a fissure in the community, and it's also a scramble, you know, to take care of things. But most importantly, it's a breach of their own vow that they made. And so Miyotai Sensei asked me, what about the running? And I, you know, felt what I'm sure many of you who have sat before Guardian Council have felt, like there's the right answer and then there's the truth. Like, what am I going for here? And you always go with the truth, okay? The truth is the right answer. And I said, I know. I have been running. I have been running. And it's not working, and now I want to commit. And I saw in her face that that was okay. It was okay to say, like, I've never committed before. I've never committed before. This is going to be my first commitment. And that was okay. There was space for that. Of course, Sishin is that in another form, the commitment that we make to enter Sishin and to be here, no matter how it's going. And Zazen, of course, is like such a explicit embodiment of that. Like, we take our seat, and then the whole world breaks open, and you never know what the person next to you is going through, but you can have some idea that from your own experience, they're traveling the length and breadth of the entire cosmos. Hongzhi says in his practice instructions, face everything, let go, and attain stability. Stay with that, just as that. Stay with this, just as this. That and this are mixed together with no discriminations as to their places. So it is said that the earth lifts up the mountain without knowing the mountain's stark steepness. A rock contains jade without knowing the jade's flawlessness. This is how to truly leave home, how home leaving must be embodied. I love those few lines. I call them to mind and use them. The practice instructions to me are totally like they are. They're like practice instructions. It's like, do this. And I feel so inspired by Hong Zhe and his articulation of things. When I read his work, I always feel like, oh, I want to know that. I want to see that for myself. Facing everything, let go and attain stability. Stay with that, just as that. Stay with this, just as this. Don't add anything extra. We're always trying. We're always trying. Don't add anything extra. Stay with that, just as that. Stay with this, just as this. When I bring that teaching into the sphere of samsara, and more specifically into considering, reflecting on taking in the world of this present time, you know, that's not a projection. That's really happening. Trump really is president. But there's also the way that we experience this. So some people may be delighted. Some people are delighted. Some people, and I count myself among them, are appalled and deeply disturbed. But if I set aside my political views, then the thing that I can see is that his presidency is actually in accord with the laws of causation all the way through, right? And people are studying this, and everyone's got their theory, and people are tracing it back to, you know, when Obama was elected, that was the moment at which the Trump, like, backlash started, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And, like, you have to go so far fucking back. But it's in accord. I mean, and that doesn't mean that we should just then shrug it off, like, okay, I guess it's karmically correct. If we're moved to act, then we should act, absolutely. But it does mean that if we're allowing his presidency to torture us, that is our business. And our business alone. So how do I use my mind? Where is the space of vow as I find myself in this present time? How can I take responsibility in a way that's appropriate and real? And may I make an ongoing study of that. So we have to shift our relationship to samsara. This also means that we're shifting our relationship to suffering and pain. So typically when suffering or pain arises, we try to kill it, squelch it, get rid of it. But as Sayin was saying yesterday, you know, I think maybe she said anger begets anger. Violence begets violence. If we react to our suffering and pain by trying to obliterate it, we are living in a tortured state. Lama Rod Owen says, to befriend pain and relate to it intimately as a means to the end of suffering. Befriend pain and relate to it intimately as a means to end the suffering of desperately trying to avoid it. So what does this mean about how we might encounter our barriers, our obstacles, the samsaric terrain? I was thinking of a Dharma encounter that really moved me from a number of years ago, I think. And in it, a student came forward. So Dharma encounter, if you're new, is like Daisan, face-to-face teaching, but it's done in public so that everyone can benefit from the exchange. And a student came forward to Shugen Roshi and said that, and this is like a very gross paraphrase as I remember it, so a million disclaimers, I didn't go back and like listen to the audio, but this person said something like, you know, my life is like full of these kinds of problems, I have to do this, I have to take care of that, I feel like I'm always thinking about this, and I'm always like worrying about that, and I'm trying to practice my life, but I feel like I'm always dragging this bag of shit everywhere. And Shugen Roshi, whatever else he may have said, the thing that rings clearest in my mind, said, you know, don't speak about it that way. That bag of shit, that's your life. That's got a lot of good things in it. There's a lot of goodness there. Our life. How do we relate to the problems and the obstacles of our life? Don't turn away. Don't turn away. Stay. Don't run. When people want to come to the monastery because they're running from their life, that doesn't work out either. I took a call at the temple a few days ago from a guy who, you know, I answered Zen Center of New York City, this is Shoan, how can I help you? And, you know, it's one of these classic phone calls. He said, I want to be a monk. And I was like, okay. I'm like trying to do, you know, at the temple, there's a lot of multitasking, so I'm like trying to stir the thing, and he's like, I want to be a monk. I'm like, okay, let me put that down, give this my full attention. And so we talked a little bit, just a very little bit was necessary. He's a young guy, he lives at home with his parents, things are not going so well, he's looking for an out. I was like, have you ever done any kind of Buddhist practice? No. Okay, well, why don't you start with the Sunday morning program? Da, 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 da. But I want to be a monk. Yep, I hear you. I got that. But like, this is how you're going to start. Come, show up, see how it goes. And bless his heart, he did show up. He was in beginning instruction. And at the end of the morning, we were chatting. And he said, I don't think this is going to work out after all. I was like, I'm glad you came. I'm glad you tried it out. Now you know for yourself. Yeah. 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 Not turning away. Not turning away from our life. Not turning away from our truth. I just watched. It was recommended by one of the residents, the Netflix Hannah Gadsby, Australian comedian, and her show Nanette, and I super highly recommend this. I see some people nodding, so some of you are familiar with it. I think there's a buzz in the culture at large, but it was news to me. I won't go into it, but the thing that I took from it is the incredible power that's available when we claim our true, authentic self and voice. when instead of running and trying to hide, we say, okay, no more. This is me. So, whose vow is holding us? How did we come to be here? Whose vows built this place and maintain it? Offer the Dharma? Where did their vows come from? It's actually really true that we are in the midst of the vows of the Buddhas and ancestors. It's actually really true. Whose vow is holding us? Does the earth have a vow? What about this mountain and her waters? A vow is timeless, it's not contained. Vows can span lifetimes, so we don't need to measure. We don't need to have a goal. We don't need to get anywhere. There's no gain. I want to close by reading that passage from Hong Zhe again. At the end, he has that line, this is how to truly leave home, how home leaving must be embodied. And, you know, there's one understanding of that, which is the home leaver is the monastic who's left home. But we are all home leavers when we take up the true path, because we are leaving that home of the familiar. We're leaving that soporific stupor of samsara. Leaving that dysfunctional household of our conditioning and our projections. And we are headed into the country of the fierce and jagged peaks of reality. And they are. Face everything, let go, and attain stability. So just let this wash over you and take what you can, and may it serve you over the next couple days of session. Vast and far-reaching, without boundary, secluded and pure, manifesting light, this spirit is without obstruction. Its brightness does not shine out, but can be called empty and inherently radiant. Its brightness, inherently purifying, transcends causal conditions beyond subject and object. Subtle but preserved, illumined and vast, also it cannot be spoken of as being or non-being, or discussed with images or calculations. Right in here, the central pivot turns. The gateway opens. You accord and respond without laboring and accomplish without hindrance. Everywhere, turn around freely, not following conditions, not falling into classifications. Facing everything, let go and attain stability. Stay with that, just as that. Stay with this, just as this. That and this are mixed together with no discriminations as to their places. So it is said that the earth lifts up the mountain without knowing the mountain's stark steepness. A rock contains jade without knowing the jade's flawlessness. This is how to truly leave home, how home leaving must be embodied.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.mro.org.